You've tuned in to Columbia Calling, your first stop for everything you want to know about Columbia. How and where to invest, where to visit. From the Pacific to the Caribbean, the Andes Mountains to the Amazon jungle, Columbia has a slice of everything. Shooting from the hip, answering the questions that need answering. Here's your host, the journalist and hotelier Richard McCall, shedding some light on the fashionable South American destination of Columbia.
It's that time of the week again, folks. And this is your host, Richard McCall, for Columbia Calling, reporting in from London, England this week. Yes, but next week I'll be back in Columbia, Bogota, or Mombos, depending on how I feel. But yes, I'm here, sitting on a main road, or just off a main road, so you will hear police cars, traffic, fire engines, and the like. And this week, episode 281, we'll be talking to our news segment provider, the director of Columbia Reports, the journalist Dutchman and enfant terrible, Adrian Alsemer. So he'll be talking in segment three, and we'll be taking a look at the politics of 2019 thus far, looking at President Duque a little bit, looking at the polarization, and looking at some other issues affecting Colombia, and of course, trying to decipher a little bit of what's going on, and could it be something that's a global pattern for our time? So let's look beyond the superficial and perhaps the short term here, and trying to take everything into account for a long term possibility and a long term view of these actions being taken in Colombia and around the world at this moment. So without further ado, I'm going to leave you in the capable hands of Adrian Alsemer to give you this week's news update from Columbia Reports. Remember, you can always become a Patreon. You can become a Patreon backer through their website and throw some money at it and ensure that independent journalism about Colombia continues. Very important, of course. But I'll leave you in his capable hands for the update, the news segment, and then we'll be back with Adrian talking further about Colombia, the news, the politics, and so on. This is episode 281. Of course, as always, get in touch at Columbia Calling on Twitter, Facebook as well, and columbiacalling@gmail.com should you want to, message me directly that way. Thank you again, and stay tuned. Bye-bye.
My name is Adrian Alsma, and this is the news for Columbia Calling for July 9, 2019. Leading senator said Saturday that intelligence agency DNI is plotting smear campaigns against critics of President Ivan Duque and his far-right Democratic Center Party. Sources allegedly told the senators that at least a dozen politicians and citizens have been singled out as political targets. The claims are similar to those made by Senator Gustavo Petro in 2008 against DNI predecessor DAS. His accusations led to the imprisonment of multiple intelligence chiefs and presidential aides. Colombia's finance minister issued a decree in which he set the terms for the sale of assets owned by the state, according to newspaper El Espectador. The decree revealed that Minister Alberto Carrasquilla plans to sell shares in company where the state is a minority shareholder and do not generate the desired revenue. The measure aims to recover some of the revenue lost last year in tax breaks for large corporations. A Colombian World Bank executive is investigated over her alleged role in the bribery practices of Brazilian engineering firm Odebrecht in Colombia, according to Semana journalist Daniel Coronel. Maria Victoria Guarín is the wife of Grupo Aval executive Diego Solano and mentioned in multiple witness statements related to one of Colombia's biggest corruption scandals of the moment. The prosecution reportedly is investigating the top official of the World Bank's International Finance Corporation to find out if she took part in Odebrecht's bribery of the administration of former President Álvaro Uribe. Weekly Semana published evidence that the Colombian army has embarked on a witch hunt to identify the military commanders who revealed its controversial order to double the number of combat kills and captures. In one recording, a top counterintelligence official offered his subordinates a $30,000 reward for information on the commanders who talked to the New York Times earlier this year. National Army Chief General Nicasio Martinez was forced to amend his directives amid fears that soldiers could return to the mass killing of civilians to meet the general's objectives. The Supreme Court has so far been unable to obtain evidence from the United States government in the case of missing FARC leader Jesús Santrich. The congressman was supposed to appear in court to defend against an American drug trafficking charge earlier today, but has been missing for more than a week. Santrich abandoned his security detail allegedly after hearing about an impending plot to assassinate or extradite him. Military intelligence told media that the FARC leader has fled to Venezuela, but his son and his party are concerned something may have happened to the virtually blind former guerrilla leader. Colombia's inspector general suspended the mayor of Tierra Alta while investigating if the politician hired paramilitaries to vacate a plot owned by his father. Mayor Fabio Otero became national news last month when the murder of community leader Maria del Pilar Hurtado sparked a wave of indignation throughout Colombia. The Otero family is one of many regional elites that used paramilitary violence to dispossess land from displaced farmers. That's the end of this week's news bulletin, but you're not done with me, Richard.
And yes, this is episode 381 of the Columbia Calling podcast. I'm Richard McCall, still here in London, England, on my annual break over here. You just listened to Adrian Alsom of Columbia Reports giving us the news update from Medellin for, the last week. Anyway, Adrian and I are continuing the conversation this week to talk a little bit about where Colombia finds herself at this moment in time and perhaps some deeper, ruminations on the potential for what is happening around the world and in Colombia. So, Adrian, thank you again for agreeing to come on the podcast in addition to your news segment.
My pleasure. Thank you for the invite.
No, it's always great. You always draw in a massive audience, so we have to make sure we get this right and, well, insult a few people and ruffle some feathers. You know, that's the kind of thing we like to do here.
I'm good at that.
Let's try not to depress ourselves and the listeners too much. And that's a forewarning, if there ever was one. But let's talk a little about the first 6 months of President Duque.
Well, it's been 10 now. Time flies. Duque's first year in office is widely considered a disaster. Pretty much because, before, Duque doesn't have a majority coalition, and has insisted on resisting the peace talks, while the majority of Congress and the court system generally favor the peace process, and that's pretty much. Made him a sort of a lame duck. He's only been able to push through 6 government proposals in the entire year. That's the lowest number of government proposals being pushed through Congress this century. Oof. The guy is epic bad.
This is the thing that fascinates me. We've got this guy. He's the president of Colombia. The only moment where he had a peak in his what do you call it, the opinion ratings, was after the bombing of the General Santander cadet space in South Bogota. And of course,
And even then he wasn't able to achieve a majority.
He didn't move over 50,
like ever since he took office, it's been a big slide down, with an exception of the response to the ELN bombing, mm-hmm. where he had a temporary hike, and he's been dropping below 30 again.
This guy, honestly, he was just over here in London. He was over here when I first came over, and I was refused entry to all the events. And that's fine. You know what? I'd actually rather spend time with my friends and see him chatting away about the orange economy. Now,
I don't think this government is a big fan of journalists.
No, definitely not. Well, you'd be better placed than me. I fly low below the radar here in Columbia Calling. Columbia Reports is a different beast altogether. But yeah, like I said, I'd prefer to hang out with my friends and see President Duque talking about the orange economy, which today I'm still unsure how he plans on getting the money to promote and to continue and make this a sustainable economical model. I'm still unsure. If anyone else has got the idea of how this is going to work, please write in, because I'd love to know. I don't know what you think.
As I just mentioned, the finance minister plans to sell off a whole bunch of stakes in companies that the government has. So they're basically doing a sort of a garage sale of the country.
Okay, but are we looking at Ecopetrol? What are we looking at? The water sources?
Yeah. Well, not Ecopetrol, because the government does have a controlling stake in that company. But in other companies where it has a minority stake, or where the minister feels that the revenue or the profit has been not high enough, those companies are going to be sold off, and that's going to result in some money for the secretary, mm-hmm. for the finance secretary, but only once.
But this is what I said, they're going to sell off parts of entities that they have a low stake in, or a reasonable stake, and these entities have not been providing, not been yielding a great enough profit. So they're going to be, I take this as being, there'll be low sales. I mean, they're not going to garner the kind of money that will be needed to kickstart the orange economy.
No, it's a typical short-term solution. It's going to allow Duque to present better fiscal numbers next year. Mm. But from then on, the profit generally generated by these companies, accumulated, will no longer be available for government revenue. Hmm.
Okay. Well, let's move on from that. Let's move on to another highly topical discussion, and then we'll move on to something further. I've got a few things up my sleeve here, but I want you what is happening with Jesus Santric, the former FARC guerrilla, now FARC on the run politician?
Yeah, that's the weirdest case possible. So the guy fled last Sunday, apparently voluntarily, from a FARC reintegration site in the north of the country at 20 miles from the Venezuelan border. Mm-hmm. Now, the government says that he fled because he wants to, he fled to Venezuela because he wants to evade justice. People close to Santrich say that he did escape his security detail, but because he feared that he was going to be the victim of an imminent assassination or even an extradition plot.
Mm-hmm.
And others fear that he's dead.
See, you know, don't get me wrong. I would just as soon like to see Jesus Santrich rotting away his days in jail. But I just see this as the most strange situation taking place.
Well, and it's a second. Mind you that Jesus Santrich, who was never accused of drug trafficking in his entire career in the FARC, suddenly last year was accused of drug trafficking. Now, Jesus Santrich, like Ivan Marquez, were supposed to be respectively the FARC's faction leader in the House of Representatives and in the Senate. Now, what you've seen with Jesus Santrich is that the guy's been the victim of a massive mind fuck. First putting him in jail on unsubstantiated charges, then being released, then being put back into jail, then being arrested again, and entering Congress, and then suddenly hearing that he's got an impending assassination plot going to kill him. The curious thing is that the same happened with Ivan Marquez, who was supposed to be the Senate leader in August last year. Marquez disappeared because he was warned about a group of hooded men that were on their way to his FARC reintegration site. So those two going into hiding seems like, well, it seems like intentional and not so much like I do not believe that they are trying to evade justice at all. I think someone has been whispering rumors in their ears that have triggered them to escape.
No.
Rather than impending death, rather than pending justice.
We suspect the Santrich's in Venezuela, but Ivan Marquez is definitely there.
I wouldn't know.
Okay. And talking about this, I mean, I see Jesus Santrich, I mean, okay, he joined the FARC very young. He's involved in all sorts of things there, but he's a 60 plus and blind? I mean, how much of a threat can he possibly be?
Well, the thing is that he couldn't be much of a threat anyway. I believe it's pretty evident right now that the U.S. claim that he sought to traffic drugs is a big hoax. Like the guy doesn't even know how to roll a fucking doobie. So now this happening, where there's another rumor that makes him flee before there was a rumor that made him attempt to commit suicide. Mm. I think that there's the guy systematically mindfucked.
Mm. So Ivan Marquez is out. Jesus Santrich is out. Who's the next person on the list?
I don't really think there is a next person. I think there is a from certain sectors who are no fan of the peace process, rather sophisticated attempts to make the political participation of the FARC fail. And by taking out their faction chiefs in the Senate and the House, their job.
Yeah. Well, you're muting them politically, but I think this is so. Again, you're anti the peace.
Well, no, you're freaking out. You're freaking out the entire FARC. Like if Santrich is going to be accused of drug trafficking and possibly extradited, while the guy is like, of all the narcos in the FARC, like Santrich was never involved in drug trafficking. The guy ran a radio station. So the whole process has been rather targeted towards like Jesús Santrich and Ivan Márquez. If you look at like Timochenko, there doesn't seem to have been any provocation. If you look at the other mid-level commanders like El Paisa or Romagna, they simply went underground because they just lost all faith in the process. But as a consequence of what happened to Santrich.
Yeah, definitely. And what's the actual number at the moment of FARC, ex-FARC combatants and the reintegration process who've been assassinated, killed, etc., since peace was signed? It's 150 or so?
Well, according to the UN, they've been able to verify 123 former members. So that's more than 1% of the people that demobilized in 2017. And then I would guess that like in response, maybe no more than 1,000 rearmed.
And that, I mean, it was the AP article some weeks ago with some very high figures of the rearming, right?
Well, but that's because they didn't make the distinction between the dissident groups, so the groups that never disarmed in the first place. And they began with approximately 500 people throughout Colombia. Now, added to that are no more, I believe, than 1,000 guerrillas who have rearmed. But most importantly, the ISIS have been recruiting a whole new genre of guerrillas.
I just think that those figures are very odd.
Some people are part of the FARC.
Yeah. And of course, if you look at other conflicts that have gone to...
Like, I do believe that...
Go on.
I'm sorry if I may. The incidents are about as big as the military says they are. So like a total of 2,000... 300 to 2,500 men and women, but only like less than half of them, of these men and women, would be FARC members that rearmed. The majority are just new recruits and people who never took part in the process in the first place.
Of course, there's been all the talk of Venezuelans joining the ranks as well, of these new criminal gangs and the dissident groups. That's how desperate the situation. What I think is, if you study conflict resolution in, you know, post-peace accords around the world, that 1,000 people, top figure, or 500 to 1,000 people have rearmed and returned to the jungles or so on, it's not a high number. You have to factor in these numbers. And so despite this dreadful situation.
It's a growing number. Mm-hmm. Like, it is a growing number because clearly, like, when the peace talks or when the peace process began, there were 500 people that were not cooperative. Mm-hmm. And now I my estimate is that there's like 1,500 mm-hmm. plus the new recruits. And so this number will clearly grow the longer the process takes and the more incentives to are to get out of the process. Mm-hmm. So like the government, like many of the guerrillas that are still in the reintegration sites are still being delivered food from the government every day. Like they are still not working. So they've been just sitting there for 2 years and a half waiting on a promise to be fulfilled. Yeah. And so you can expect that the longer that takes, like the more guerrillas will lose confidence in the peace process or in the government's word to implement a peace deal, and that's going to obviously increase the desertation rate over time.
Yeah. So this, I don't know. You know, obviously, I spend a fair amount of time on Twitter, reading the threads, reading articles coming up, seeing people who I like speaking, and so on. And of course, you know, you read all the newspapers and listen to hearsay here and there. And I find it very peculiar because you've got the Uribista camp who, it's just, I mean, there's a lot of virulent spiel. And then you've got like, let's say, Petrista camp. And again, there's virulent spiel from that side too. People are talking always about
And you got like the center, yeah. You got the center right block, which has been a determining factor in Congress.
Mm. But talking about this between the polarization, everyone's always talking about the extreme right and the extreme left, but you have a different concept on this as based on a recent editorial that you wrote.
Oh, well, clearly there's like a far left and a far right. There's been a clear radicalization of the Uribistas, and they've been there. The number has been decreasing. Like the support for former President Uribe has been decreasing gradually, which is like where we get to a far more division than the left and right, and that's the division between the, if you look at the opinion polls, the approval rating of Duque is like absurdly low, like among young Colombians, so people between 18 and 24, and it's like considerably higher like among old people, so like people older than 55. Mm. And a big difference there in the perception of the political division we're in is that these old people above 40 were given education before the 1991 constitution, which separated the church and state. So what the division in the generational division you see now is between those who have been educated by the state during the Cold War and people younger than 40 who have been educated by a public education system in a post Cold War period when the Soviet Union had already fell apart, and now there's a new generation entering voting age, and there are people who were never around in the 1990s. And in the beginning of this century, when violence was at its highest, So they are being brought up like without the trauma that older Colombians carry with them.
And this is reflecting in the polls.
Yeah, but this is why Petro did so, like why the left did so extremely well in the last elections, because like the majority of those people were just leftist were young voters. I'm sorry, who felt appealed to like the message of being progressive. As it was brought by Petro. The older generation saw in him like a guerrilla and a leftist and blah, blah, blah. But younger people heard an entirely different message. So this is a societal change, a post-war societal change that is going to, that's unstoppable. Unless the violence like resurges the levels like in the 1990s, but the younger generation, people who are now becoming politically active, are of a totally different culture than older Colombians.
I like this. I see where you're going with this. I like this, and I've talked about it on a different level, of course, just that more superficial, but talking about this new generation coming through who haven't lived the extreme violence of the past, and so they don't, you know, do not have this, what we'd say in Colombia, rencor in their hearts. They're not twisted by a desire for vengeance.
But they were never raised or they were never educated among the lines of the division of the Cold War. They have entirely different priorities. For example, like corruption, than old people do.
Mm. Well, my concern. I mean, in the short term, who we've got, you know, a figurehead who represents, you know, the pre-1991 change in constitution, and all of his cronies, well, not totally his cronies, all of the cronies of that ilk around him, and the corruption seems to be, well, I think it's the same as it's always been, really high, but perhaps we're seeing more of it because of levels of intuition, investigation, and acceptance.
Well, we're seeing more of it. Well, we're seeing more of it, and this is like from the perspective of a journalist, because there are more journalist resources available to look into corruption. Like before, as a journalist, like was mainly like reporting or like 10 people killed here, so many people killed there, la la la. And now like there's a lot more time to look into like who is stealing the money where. And that is and that's obviously like was like especially with young people becoming much more of priority than like old school issues like socialism, capitalism. Like young people are like they know that they're going to be suffering from water shortages in 30 years. When like older people, well, they would already be dead when that happens. So like things like corruption and the environment are much more concerns for people, and this is a global trend. But particularly in Colombia, it just undermines the rhetoric that's always like politically fueled, like armed conflict.
Do you Do you think this...
Like climate change is not a left-right thing. It's something we need to deal with. Mm. It's a new event that has to do with capitalism or socialism.
But Adrian, I mean, do you think then we will see, I know it's short term, but a reflection of these thoughts and these feelings in October's elections?
Absolutely.
Mm.
And especially because like Ivan Duque has been doing such a terrible job there on a local level. And this is also part of the peace process that sought like more political inclusion for generally were left out of politics. Like politics in Colombia is traditionally run by elites, so like political dynasties. The peace deal allowed the political inclusion not just of the FARC, but all kinds of political parties that have nothing to do with the old elite. The good example.
Yeah, I mean the importance of coalitions in the government at this time in Colombia's history is paramount, and therefore it does give us and give Colombians a greater opportunity, a breadth of voting options. I can only see the importance of this and hope that this does reflect in October, although I think there's the ordinary economically funded machinations which will take place, the Char family on the coast, the Santo Domingos, the Angulo Sarmientos. I think that they are the kingmakers at the end.
The Ramirez and Boyacá, the Gaviria in Antioquia. Clearly, those political dynasties are still very, very powerful and able to actions in their favor. But independent candidates, like here in Medellin, for example, like. There's a guy running for mayor called Daniel Calle, who is not a leftist, who is not an Uribista, but who is very pissed off about like how we lost a lot of money with the Hidro Ituango hydroelectric dam, and the guy is really pulling in. Well, he's really getting a lot of attention and a lot of respect, and he's making a big chance of becoming mayor of Medellin, which will be a vote that does not go either to like binary political dogmas like left or right, or to the traditional families that have traditionally run Antioquia and Medellin.
Well, that would be a massive, massive break from the past if something like that could be pushed through.
Well, I don't believe you can push such a thing through. I believe that, like, with the evolution of time, and with the evolution of the demographics in society. Sooner or later, you're going to have that the old structures disappear, and that entirely new opportunities arise politically.
As you said, this seems and sounds and looks to be a global phenomenon. We don't need to mention the other parts of the world, but all over the world, there seems to be uneasy ground for the, let's say, traditional political parties that we've known. Would you agree with me with that?
Yeah. Well, there's like people are fed up A lot of people are being fed up being governed by a sort of like a liberal elite or a patronizing elite, and they want to be heard. So this is why I believe why Britain voted Brexit, and why in the United States people voted for Trump. Like, they simply didn't want the same old bullshit. I can't really blame them.
Well, sitting here in London right now.
Well, clearly Brexit is an utter disaster, yeah. And clearly Trump is an utter disaster. But that's because, like, there hasn't been a new generation of politicians that provide a better alternative. If you look at the United States, like, voting for Hillary Clinton was simply not an alternative, mm-hmm. for many people, and unless political forces like know to come up with a new type of politician that does not belong to like the typical liberal elite or the typical like patronizing elite, then things are gonna change. The problem is the front runners in offering like this anti-elitist politics have been complete fucking morons. I.e. Nigel Farage, Boris Johnson, Donald Trump, like we're still waiting for people who are not idiots to propose themselves as candidates that do not represent that old patronizing blah about the politicians deciding what is good for us.
What do you think when it comes to Bogota, who's going to take the mantle of mayor there?
Well, that's a perfect example of where like a new generation, but like what that's concerned, Colombia's actually more ahead than Britain and the UK. So like in Medellin, you got an anti-corruption candidate with no specific political dogma leading the race. In Bogota, you got Claudia Lopez, who is a lesbian, and again an anti-corruption candidate. So you got, like, in Colombia, there are, like, alternatives to the traditional rule. And that you have yet to see in the United States, like or in Britain. Mm. If I've been looking at the U.S. And then you've got this guy with the shiny teeth making his appearance again on Joe Biden. Guy's fucking
79. I don't think
are they killing everyone over there? Or
yeah, honestly, I might as well be in the hood where I am. I'm on a major road from a fire station and from a hospital. So it's Saturday night. What do the Brits do? they fight and set fire to things.
They drink to forget their English.
Well, that's it. They've been drinking because it's sunny. We've had a good week, so they've been drinking because of that. Now, perhaps they've forgotten their English and they're fighting. So who knows? Listen, it's been there's too many things to unwrap in that last spiel of conversation. There's too many things to unwrap. I just find myself, you know, I say this week in, week out, I go through peaks and troughs in Colombia, and I needed a break. I needed to get away for a little bit, come here to the UK. It's no better here, but at least you know, I'm a little bit more detached from what's going on in Colombia. I'll go back and I'll hit the papers and the politics with renewed vigor. But sometimes you just need a breather. I mean, you had an extended stay away, but the first couple of weeks must have been a great relief when you were back in Holland.
I don't know. I hadn't been back home for like more than a decade.
Yeah, it's a long time.
So particularly a big fan of my country, I think, is rather boring.
Okay.
So I was happy as shit to be back in Colombia.
Well, I'm going to be happy to head back next week. I have to say that. But listen, as we wind down, remember.
Please continue.
Continue. Clearly, there's like.
Well, there's benefits to the Netherlands. Like it's statistically impossible to get killed. Like you can ride your bicycle in traffic stoned. That's obviously like benefits, but I wasn't very impressed.
Well, on that note, and having spoken about this revolution for the 21st century and the way that things are going, remember always, all of you, to check out ColombiaReports.com, the website. And of course, they have a Patreon page where you can pledge money to enable this very necessary and important website to continue to deliver us the news from Colombia that has failed to be reported elsewhere. So it's a great pleasure to have had Adrian Alsema of Colombia Reports, the guy who gives us the news segment every week and, you know, keeps Colombia calling at the fore as well of podcasts here about Colombia. So Adrian, thank you again for your time.
Thank you.
Yes. Well, that's been a great episode with Adrian Alsema. This has been episode 281 of the Colombia Calling podcast. I've been Richard McCall, broadcasting in from London, England. Next one will be from Colombia. I'll be back in my adopted homeland. Of course, get in touch with us via Facebook, Colombia Calling, Twitter at Colombia Calling, and of course, email ColombiaCalling@gmail.com should you want to. This has been a fantastic show once again. Thank you for listening and farewell.